Hello, America. This is the place for uncensored talk on everything that divides us as a nation. I'm Alan Jacoby, and welcome to The Great Divide. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to The Great Divide podcast. I'm your host, Alan Jacoby. Today, I'm with a special guest, Kevin Smith, who's the co-founder of Long Island Loud Majority, which is a political movement that started in Long Island, conservative Republican base. They were doing Trump rallies, and now they're moving forward to hopefully help to remove our horrible governor, Andrew Cuomo, and also to get involved in New York City politics to maybe elect the next New York City mayor. Kevin, thanks for being here. How are you? Tell us about Long Island Majority. What are you guys doing?
Well, thanks for having me. Right now, we're working with Curtis Lewa in the city to get him elected mayor now that Bill de Blasio's out. And after that, we're going to be working with Lee Zeldin to get him elected governor. We've been running car rallies all over the island and bringing together like-minded people doing like-minded things.
Nice. And for those of you who don't know who Curtis Lewa is, Curtis Lewa is the founder of the New York City Guardian Angels. We're back in the, I think as early as maybe the late 70s, but early 80s, they formed a, I won't call them a vigilante security force, but a very aggressive community watch and reach out program where these guys, they were known for their white t-shirts with the red guardian angel on it and their red berets, their infamous red berets. And they would ride the subways in the 80s, the graffiti and crime ridden subways. And because the police were outnumbered, the police couldn't handle all of the crime in the 80s when crack dominated. So the guardian angels were out there. They were volunteer. They were out there to report, to help. And they helped the New York City Police Department put a dent in crime forever. Curtis Lewa was also, there was an attempted assassination on his life back in the, I believe, I forget the year, but the 80s, where he was in a taxi cab. And that was rumored to believe a hit from the renowned mafia boss, John Gotti. So now he's running for New York City mayor. And I would love to see him mayor in New York City. I think anybody who's running right now, if anybody deserves it, Kevin, I think it's Curtis Lewa, without a doubt.
Well, you know, the thing about Curtis is he saved the city once before. You know, he saved the city throughout the 80s. He got really big in the Bernie Getz incident. Yes. Basically, he's been on our side of everything. He's a law and order candidate, and he's a phenomenal public speaker. He's incredible. Yes. I mean, if you guys haven't heard Curtis Lewa speak, just go on YouTube, type in Curtis Lewa, S-L-I-W-A, and you can literally listen to You can listen to hours of him talk. He's a great speaker, and he's a neighborhood guy. You know, he's got more street cred than probably anybody who's ever run for mayor. And, you know, he's been out there. He openly talks about how he's got 5 hollow point bullets in his leg.
Yeah, and not only that, but he's everything he's done for the city and how great he speaks. But he truly loves New York City and its history and its people and its police and all of its civil servant. I mean, he is 100% law and order. He's for the police department. He's not one of these idiot radical leftists that want to defund the police like the current mayor and his, you know, and his family, like his daughter running around protesting with the mayor's daughter. She's an animal. But anyway, I'll try to keep it,
No, that
somewhat civil.
Look, you're not wrong. I mean, I think that people need to understand that, you know, particularly in these lockdowns, right? You see, everyone with a job tells you can't go to work. Everyone who has private security tells you to defund the police.
Right.
And it's mind-blowing to me that a guy like Bill de Blasio, who, you know, cares so much about the climate, takes an SUV to Brooklyn to go to the gym every day.
Yes, he
they
does.
Don't
he
live in, they don't live in the same reality we do. A guy like Curtis Lewa, he rides the subway by himself to events. You know, he's not afraid.
No, he was never afraid. Even when they almost successfully killed him, he wasn't afraid then. And he said, you know, maybe one day someone will take me out, but maybe it wasn't today. And nobody has successfully done it yet. you talk about private security and all that, defunding the police, because now the whole new thing, I just did a whole episode, an hour and a half on this, abolish the police, and you have, you know, the congressional leftist squad, those sickos led by AOC. I don't even like saying their names, so I'm not going to give them any notoriety. Everyone knows who the squad is. AOC is the ringleader. But again, something just came out the other day that I posted on social media about all four of them with their campaign funds. They have spent thousands and thousands of dollars on private security from them for themselves, and they ride around in their SUVs. You know, AOC was a bartender. Even then, I don't think she brought anything to the table, and she literally spends money on security. This is the first real job she had, making her $174,000 a year. She gets driven around in her SUV, and the hypocrisy and the hypocritical bullshit that they all cry, it gets worse and worse by the day. You know?
It really does. And you know what? That was so interesting, because after January 6th, Matt Gaetz on the floor of the Congress said, "I'm really happy for the first day that everyone on the other side of the aisle doesn't want to, for one day, defund the police." I think that if Ayanna Pressley and AOC and Ilhan Omar and all that want to defund the police, I say we start with the Capitol Police and then just see how January 6th would have went had it not been for those brave men and women. The fact of the matter is that if they don't want the cops, let them take the cops away from their neighborhoods and see how that goes. Because they're not going to leave my neighborhood, I'll tell you that much.
No. And it's gone further than that, because now they've gone from, you know, because of the latest shooting with Dante Wright and in Minneapolis, they've gone to where now it's full abolishment of the police. I mean, the tweets that they were sending out about, you know, no more police, no more incarceration. This is the United States of America. We're not a third world country. We have law and order. We have police. We have laws. We have local. We have state. We have federal governments. There are laws to follow. And then you have sitting members of Congress that turn around and say that we should not have police and that we should not be incarcerating criminals. Well, what kind of ideologies comes from these members of Congress? And it's hard. I can't believe we're saying that. Members of Congress that maybe want us to live in a lawless, policeless society. So, Kevin, we have what happened today. The verdict came for Derek Chauvin in the murder trial for George Floyd, which historically, you know, it only took them about 12 hours to come up with a verdict, which, you know, we already know what the verdict is as we're talking. But historically, when they come up with a verdict that fast, it's not in good for the defense. And in this case, we know it wasn't. He was found guilty on all three charges. What do you think? What do you think about this?
You know, it's tough because I don't want to live in a country that sacrifices someone's life, you know, so that cities don't burn. But if you look at the actual statutes, if you look at Murder 2, there is no way in this case you can find Murder 2 for what he did. And I'm not saying what Derek Chauvin did was right. I'm not saying he shouldn't have went to jail. But I'm saying that I think manslaughter would have been a far more efficient charge to convict him on solely for what he did, because there's no way you can prove intent. There's no way he went out that day and tried to kill George Floyd. No. That just didn't happen. Did he act maliciously? I don't believe so. Did he act recklessly? Perhaps. And the fact is, this guy's going to do 50 years in jail for this. Now, if you're a young police recruit, are you sticking around? No.
Right.
I don't have kids, but if one of my cousins or something said, "I want to be a cop," I'd say, "What are you, insane?" And I come from a family of law enforcement.
Yeah, I have law enforcement in my family, and most of my friends are law enforcement. That's just what I've been around my whole life. I was, I worked EMS in the city for a long time. So that was my lifestyle growing up, being around law enforcement and the police and in situations, you know, that dealing with the police. But I'm not going to pretend, you know, to play attorney and everything. I will say that what he was found guilty of is, to me, an injustice of the justice system, in my opinion. You know, a lot of people say the justice system only works, you know, when you want it to work in your favor. If it doesn't work in your favor, you're going to say, well, the justice system didn't work because maybe it didn't work for you.
And look, I'm somebody who believes in the justice system. Like, take a controversial kid. Take OJ.
Sure.
Look, what do I think happened? That doesn't really matter what I think happened. He was found innocent. So if you want to believe in the system, he was found innocent. Do we all know what happened that night? We all know what happened that night. But he was found innocent. Same thing with us. Same thing with a Casey Anthony. You know, she was found innocent. I don't know. But, you know, it's so if you're going to – if you want it one way, you have to be principled and have it both ways. But, you know, I think that I think that he may have been sacrificed.
I think it's funny you bring up Casey Anthony because I often have a controversial discussion with people on the Casey Anthony case. Again, I'm not an attorney, but when that verdict came out with Casey Anthony, everyone was saying that damn jury in Florida, they were wrong. They didn't know what they were doing. But my opinion is the prosecutor in that case was greedy.
Yes.
And she was charged with the murder one. And there was no intent. Casey Anthony is guilty of causing the death of her child.
Yes.
She didn't have it. I believe she didn't have it in her head that I'm going to kill my baby today. I mean, she was a piece of garbage as a mother. She was a piece of garbage as a person. She still is to this day. But she didn't maliciously have the intent to kill her baby. She should be in jail. I 100% agree she should be in jail.
But if they had went for a lower charge, like criminally negligent homicide, which is basically her being charged as being a terrible mother, which I think was pretty obvious. But I just use those as powerful examples. If you're going to believe in the justice system one way, you got to believe in it the other way when it goes a way you don't personally agree with.
But then we go back to the George Floyd case and the trial with Derek Chauvin, which again he's as of right now he's found guilty. We know there's going to be an appeal, but now let's. I didn't follow the trial. I didn't watch it. I got updates on it daily here and there. But I didn't sit there and watch it. So I'm not going to pretend that I know everything that was said. I watched the video, the whole thing. We get the gist of what happened, what didn't happen, but. Let's look outside the trial where, I mean, let's just look at what another sitting member of Congress did, Maxine Waters, Mad Max. I mean, she turned around and she blatantly incited violence. And to me, that was jury tampering is what she did because this jury was not sequestered.
No.
I mean, look at that video from that woman, that Black Lives Matter activist about a couple weeks ago, where she made a video that kind of went viral because all the mainstream media decided to carry it, where she said if there was not a guilty verdict in the Chauvin case, that cities were going to burn. You can promise that cities were going to burn. So tell me that these jurors, who I feel bad for in a way, but in a sense...
Be on that jury.
No, nobody would want to be on that jury, but how they weren't sequestered, I don't know. How the judge could allow, after a sitting member of Congress said that in public, how other threats to the jury. There was a lot of Alan Dershowitz said it, like him or not. He, you know, lawyer. He was one of OJ's attorneys. He was he's a law professor at Harvard. He said that there was, and he's an attorney, so I'm going to take what he says. A lot of people don't agree with it, but he said that there was enough. Enough there for that judge to declare a mistrial. I agree with him, but what position does it put that judge in?
Oh, absolutely. Because you got to understand that a judge like that, you know, let's go back and look at the OJ judge. That man was seen as incompetent for the rest of his life.
Judge Ito.
Everyone, he's literally the most famous judge other than Supreme Court judges, maybe on the planet, because he was seen as incompetent. And I think that this judge may not be seen as bad, but that's because the defendant isn't as famous. But, you know, he allowed evidence that shouldn't have been allowed. He didn't sequester the jury. He didn't allow the trial to be moved. I mean, I don't know how you think right. You're going to get a fair trial in the city of Minneapolis.
Yeah. Definitely.
But the judge was right when these elected members of Congress and famous people need to stop talking about active processes. But this is nothing new from Maxine Waters. She did it in 92. She called it the L.A. Uprising.
Yes.
She did it. She's done it on every single case. She is nothing more than a radical. And she has been. She has been for 30 years. I don't know why anyone is surprised by this.
No. And she incited violence against former President Trump's cabinet and said, really? You see them push on them, tell them they're not wanted. I mean, this is supposed to be a distinguished member of our federal government who is supposed to defend the Constitution of the United States, which half of Congress doesn't do. And that goes for Republicans and Democrats, between the rhinos and the leftists, the radicals on the left. And it's a shame. I mean, today, it was like within the hour, as soon as the verdict was read, Nancy Pelosi and the Democratic Black Caucus ran out on the Capitol steps with their podium, giving a press conference about how happy they were about the verdict, because it's all political, because everything has to be politicized. They're happy about the verdict, and it's not over, that this is just the beginning. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean that Nancy Pelosi and Democrats now want to go after every police officer that was involved in some sort of shooting? Does that mean that they want to encourage the violence and the uprising that's going on? Like Nancy Pelosi says, well, maybe people will do something.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, we're filming this about 2 hours before, about 2 hours after the verdict.
Yep.
And the real test is going to be, he was found guilty on all three charges. Will cities still burn? They got what
watching.
Will Minneapolis burn tonight? We are tracked. Our group is tracked by Antifa and BLM all through New York. You know, we know who they are. They know who we are. And there's already people outside of Atlantic, right on Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn right now, outside of the Barclays Center, just ready to cause trouble. And they got what they wanted, and they're still going to set the city on fire. So what do you want? What do you want to not set this country on fire? Because frankly, if this city burns tonight, I don't care anymore. I don't care about your problems, because you got what you wanted and you still went out. Okay, look, I know everyone needs a new pair of shoes, but
Foot Locker. That was in Brooklyn Center. That was one of the first stores they looted, and Foot Locker donated $200 million to Black Lives Matter, and they were all coming out of the store with 200 pairs of Jordans after they smashed the glass, you know?
Yeah, it's why. Look at Portland. Portland is a failed city. It's done. Portland's never coming back. It took LA 25 years to come back after Rodney King. 25 years, and it's still not back yet.
No. I was watching some of the crowd reactions, and I believe it was the area where the location where George Floyd died, there was a gas station, and there was somebody putting up, they have the gas station signs of how much it is a gallon, and they have the magnet letters, and the guy had the magnet letters, and everyone was cheering, and he was typing out, George Floyd, justice, and he's writing out justice served. And at the end, after served, he had a magnet with a question mark, and everybody was like in an uproar, like, well, what is the question? Does that mean that they're sitting back and waiting to see how he's sentenced? Or does that mean, because obviously we know there's going to be an appeal, that I'm sure they're working on the appeal tonight. And when this case does get appealed, I mean, the judge said it himself, that because of the words of Maxine Waters, that there is a possibility that it may completely overturn a decision in this case. Now, imagine that. Imagine an appellate judge sees all of this, and he that's down the road, and he's not interested in the politics, for hopefully, and to give his decision. And imagine he overturns this case completely because of the big picture. What's going to happen then?
The only thing that could be worse than that is if this goes all the way to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court doesn't usually rule on criminal cases. But no. With a 5-4, well, technically 6-3 conservative leaning court, but 5-4 because Judge Roberts is useless. If that went all the way to the, if that went all the way to the Supreme Court and three Trump appointees voted to overturn this, and it got overturned, like where? Yeah. I don't even. I mean, at that point, I think I'm moving to Sweden.
I don't think it's going to happen there. I mean, you know, whatever Minnesota. I mean, he has an appeal. I don't know how many appeals they get. I don't know. Maybe it goes by state. If he has that, there's a certain amount, I guess, each state where you exhaust your appeal process. And then I don't know if the state. I don't even know if the state Supreme Courts get involved in the appeals. I don't know. But now I think I don't think there's any chance of it going to the federal Supreme Court because I don't think they do.
There, but that's worst case scenario.
Oh, yeah, imagine, yeah, if, you know, forget it. But I think I'm curious to see what happens because now that they got this guilty verdict, now what they're going to try to do is they're going to try to pressure – well, now you have the cop in Brooklyn Center, what's her name, Kim Potter, where she was arrested for manslaughter. They're gonna hope and try to pressure for an upgraded charge from the prosecutor there. That's a whole other story. I watched that video. I was paying attention to that. That's a case of an idiot criminal and an idiot police officer who just maybe, you know, granted, you know, she's a cop of 26 years, but I she could have maybe skated for 26 years. She was a field train. She didn't. The odds are against her because she was a field training officer at one point. She was a union president representing police officers at one point. She, you know, I get adrenaline. Everybody's human. They're not RoboCops. Mistakes happen. Again, she didn't wake up leaving her husband and two kids saying, I'm going to go out and kill a black kid today.
Of course
she didn't do that. We know she didn't do that. But the video is the video. And, you know, maybe you saw the video, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So in the beginning of the video, because That Kim Potter, the police officer who's now charged, who shot Dante Wright, she wasn't the police officer, I believe, that originally stopped him. And this is what gets me with this, is he was pulled over. When it was first reported, he was stopped. We knew he was stopped. And at first it was, well, because he had air fresheners hanging from his rearview mirror. But then we found out that that's what he called his mother and say, I got pulled over by the police, and gave her that reason. We know that's not true. It was expired tags. But did you see when she was approaching, because nobody, the other police officers that were on scene, the one that was detaining him, attempting to detain him, I don't think he was identified. But from the looks of the video, and it could be the lighting, it could be the video, I could be wrong, but it looked like that police officer was African-American.
I haven't looked that closely at it, but
I watched it a couple times. I got to go back and look. If anybody saw the video who's watching,
if that happens to be true, watch how quickly it goes away.
Well, I don't know, because see if that police officer that was detaining him was African American, I would imagine that was the police officer that stopped him or was with the other officer that stopped him for the expired tags and then realized he had a warrant for aggravated robbery. I mean, he was not a church church boy. He wasn't an altar boy. He has a criminal history with a firearm. So he made the conscious choice to get away from that police officer with one handcuff on, jump in the car. And yeah, and here comes Officer Potter thinking she has her taser and goes through the whole motion. I'm going to tase you, taser, 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 and then shoots him and he takes off and the kid dies. And that's where we're at now. She's in jail. Brooklyn Park is a disaster. Their mayor, Mike Elliott, is another piece of work who thinks police officers don't need guns for car stops.
That is one of the more do these people think before they speak? Like, I just want to be like, I tell you what, why don't we take away the – fine. I agree. Let's take away the guns from your police, from the cops who protect you.
Well, and again, so this is the mayor who I think was elected maybe a year before. he's a fairly new mayor, and to sit there and say that, and then first say, well, I agree with the removal of this police officer before she resigned. But then the city manager, so the mayor's black, yeah. The city manager was also black, and then the city manager says after that, well, we're going to make sure due process is served for everybody. And then the very next day, the mayor put out a tweet that his city manager was fired and replaced because he didn't agree with him.
I mean, it's to be fired for claiming someone deserves due process. I mean, that is one of the more absurd things. You know, they're not even hiding the ball anymore, that they just don't care. They just don't, you know, it used to be the Democrats and Republicans had the same goals. We just have different ways of getting there. These people just don't like the country. That's it. There's no other way to say it.
I mean, no, you're right. I mean, when you have democratic socialists that want to control every aspect of your life and your government and want the big government and want the high taxes and want the shutdowns and the handouts and everything else. No, obviously it's concerning because the problem is that younger people are supporting this.
Yes.
Like the generations behind us. I mean, I'm 42 years old, that there are some, maybe not the generation right behind me, but the generation behind that, you're getting this. Yeah. Yo, no, we support all that. We don't think the police officers should have guns. I mean, there are Democrats out there that were saying that in New York City, that they were saying that the only one who should have bullets are the sergeants in the precincts. None of the other police officers should have any bullets. I remember when they were talking about that.
Yeah.
Insanity.
I know someone whose kid goes to one of the public schools in Brooklyn. We'll say which one. But he was suspended from school because they were talking about systemic American racism in policing. And he said, well, what about all the gangland shootings in Huntington Station? Now, you know, this kid is, I think he's 13. Now,
right.
When I was 13, I did not know about the gangland shootings in Huntington Station. And I live 5 miles from Huntington Station. This kid lives in Brooklyn and he knows about it.
And so he knows about it.
How bad is crime now in certain parts of the richest place in America? Suffolk County has some of the highest taxes on Long Island. Some of the highest taxes in the country. It's one of the some of the richest neighborhoods in the world. But 10 miles down the road, MS-13 controls whether or not you can use a traffic light.
Right, right. It's and again, what's the incentive of police today to want to go the extra mile and actually enforce the law and make us safe when a city like New York City says, well, we're going to take away civil immunity from our police officers. So if you have an interaction with a police officer that you don't like, you can sue that police officer civilly and take his house and his pension and his livelihood and put him in the poorhouse. And there are cities around the country, a couple in California, that are following suit. And what's to say, especially in all these sick lefty lands that are run by these crazy radical Democrats, that they don't all do that? Why, one, like you said earlier, why would you want to be a police officer? I tell everybody, you're crazy if you want to take a police test in today's day and age.
Yeah.
And the ones that are there, their main goal always is have a safe shift and go home to your family. But now it's, well, in order for me to have a safe shift, I shouldn't do any type of policing and just collect my paycheck. They don't want me to do anything.
Exactly.
And the moment I do, I'm in trouble, or I'm sued, or I'm in jail and on trial for something that I did in order to make the community safe. You know,
it's called the Ferguson effect. When you criticize cops and you leave them vulnerable, they just don't show up anymore.
Right.
And I don't blame them, because look, why would you, like, if a suspect is trying to run and you think that shooting him is going to put you in the same position as the Rayshard Brooks incident in down in Atlanta at the Wendy's.
Right.
Why would you even go? All right. So there's a drunk guy sleeping in a drive-thru. Yeah. All right. He'll wake up eventually, or he drives home and he runs over a bunch, or he hits a family and kills them. Like,
sure.
And we also don't allow for the fact, like, look at this case in Brooklyn. What is it?
Brooklyn Center. City? Yeah.
In Brooklyn Center, right? Let's just say this woman made a mistake. Genuinely made a mistake. In what other profession would you throw? Could you imagine throwing doctors in jail or nurses in jail for just making a mistake? 200, I think it's 200,000 deaths every year based on medical malpractice. If you put every one of those doctors in jail, there would be no more doctors.
Well, right. And, you know, you talk about making a mistake, which that's human. You can make a human mistake. And if I just the hypocrisy again, because if Dante Wright was white, you know, he had a white mom. If he had a white father and he was white and he was shot by a white police officer, or even if he was shot by a black police officer, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. No police officer would be arrested. We would not even know that it happened. And again, because statistically, more white people get shot and killed by police in this country than black people. And maybe that's because per capita, there's a larger population of white people in the country. But still, the statistics are there.
Yeah.
And I'm tired of the divisive rhetoric from sitting government lawmakers, and you know, you have your activists, you have the Black Lives Matter movement. You know, they want the divide, because the more the divide that they get, the more money they're going to get pouring in from the pandering, and you know, the more large houses that they can buy, buying large mansions, BLM. I mean, come on. So and it doesn't matter if you're a corporation. You can write a huge check for millions and millions of dollars. They're still going to burn down your store, Apple and Foot Locker. You're not immune to the violence. You're not immune to the destruction. And is it ever going to go away? Is the violence and destruction ever going to go away? Or is now this the society that we're moving into for the future of this country? Is this what we're turning into?
I think it's going to take leaders within those certain communities to step up. You just talked about how statistically you're more likely to be shot by a cop if you're white than if you're black. That study came out by a man named Roland Fryer at Harvard University, who happens to be a black professor. It's going to take people within the community to show other people that this simply isn't true, that you have a better chance of hitting the lottery than being shot while black. That is just a fact.
At least by a police officer anyway, unless you're walking around Chicago, you know, which
Black Lives Matter doesn't care about any of that. They don't care about, they don't care about the fact that last year more black babies were aborted in New York City than born. Those black lives don't matter.
No, they don't. And they neither don't does the seven, neither does the 7 year old that was killed in the McDonald's drive through with her father. On Sunday in Chicago, I mean, you're getting your daughter a Happy Meal, and somebody lights your car up with bullets, kills your 7 year old. He doesn't die, and I feel so bad for him, because if I was her father and I'm sitting there laying in the hospital riddled in bullets, I would have hoped at that point that I'm dead.
100%.
And where's the outrage?
It's not.
Where's dead. Black Lives Matter?
Well, because it's they can't make any money off of that killing. Not for nothing, but someone like Al Sharpton or Jesse Jackson, I hate to say it, every time a black person is shot by the police in this country, all they hear in their ears are dollar signs. Al Sharpton's been doing it in New York City since the 1980s. Every single time. And even when he's wrong, Tawana Brawley, he just blows it off like it's nothing.
Right.
I'm still waiting to figure out what happened with that case. That happened 2 years before I was born.
Right.
But you know what? Sure enough, Al Sharpton, he gets to meet with every presidential candidate. He's got a show on MSNBC, and he's completely famous for perpetuating an absurd rape hoax against a dead guy.
Right. And at the same time, you know, he what was it, yesterday, he posted the thing, like he's got his newspapers and his coffee, and he's walking to his private jet so he can fly to Minneapolis to see what the verdict is and be with the George Floyd family. Jesse Jackson was there today. He's another one. He's a little more low-key these days, but he's another one. How can we profit off of African-Americans' deaths by saying we actually care, meaning Al Sharpton? Listen, he doesn't give a shit. He needs a news camera. He's getting donations to his his foundation or whatever the hell he has. It's probably not paying taxes like he never does anyway.
National Action Network.
Right. It's all about money to them. It's all about the notoriety. It's all about who's listening to them. And it's pandering, it's pandering, it's pandering. And Al Sharpton is one of the worst. And what's really sad, I don't know if they still do it, but the New York City Police Department, a buddy of mine, when he was in the academy, he says to me one day, I'm going back quite a few years. He goes, Alan, you're not going to believe this. He goes, today, I don't know if, I think he was in the academy when it happened, or it was just a training. But they were doing it to academy recruits. They were sending them to the Apollo Theater in Harlem, and they were sitting in the auditorium, and they were listening. The New York City Police Department was paying Al Sharpton to give a class or just a speech about the relationships between African American communities and the police departments. And you want to talk about pandering, where the city of New York now is going to pay this guy to talk to their police officers. Al Sharpton, really? That's the best you could come up with. And I'm all for talking about having new police recruits knowing about the interactions with minority neighborhoods, because there are a lot of police officers out there, especially in New York City, who take the test, who grew up in a lily white neighborhood and have never dealt with a minority community. You know, yeah. I've worked in Brooklyn. I worked in Washington Heights. I worked in South Jamaica. I grew up in a predominantly black neighborhood. I grew up in Uniondale, New York, right on the border of Roosevelt and Hempstead. I was the only white kid in my neighborhood. Okay. So someone who has that experience knows what it's like in a minority neighborhood. So I get wanting to show white police officers that maybe don't have that experience until they're assigned to a black neighborhood is fine. But Al Sharpton?
I mean, you know what? I don't know if that's real, but if it is, that's one of the most absurd things I think I've ever heard. Because, you know, that's what I would love to tell some of these activists. You ever notice that you guys never get anything out of any of this, but your leaders – your leaders always make bank. Your leaders are worth millions of dollars. We see the leader of Black Lives Matter buying a $1.4 million estate in a town with 9 black people in it. If Black Lives Matter so much, then why aren't you moving to South Central Los Angeles? Why aren't you moving on Crenshaw Boulevard? You're not. You're moving to – I think it's I forgot the name of the town, but
I forget the name of it.
But it's like 99.4% white. Why? Oh. I mean,
hypocrisy on racism. It's look at, God, we could talk about this all night. Look at Major League Baseball, Kevin. They turned around and they took the All-Star game out of Atlanta, who's predominantly – it's a minority city, and they took away the chances of that city having upwards of $100 million or more in revenue for that, and they brought it to Lily White, Denver, Colorado.
That's
because they didn't like the voting laws, and Colorado has the voter ID laws. Yeah. Explain that to me.
Well, because it's just virtue signaling. It's just about, you know – we live in a world now where people can feel virtuous by hurting communities if you just say the right thing. We live in a world now where we can get rid of plastic straws wrapped in paper and get paper straws wrapped in plastic and think that we're doing something. You're not doing a damn thing. I mean, it's absurd.
Dude, I can't stand. I go into the deli by my house and I order like a bunch of egg sandwiches and stuff, and they're taking out the paper bags and everything's wrapped in plastic and we're putting it in paper bags. And I was laughing with them and saying, isn't this great? Now half the shit's going to fall out of the bags and because it's going to rip open, all because you can't give me a plastic bag to put all the plastic wrapped stuff in it. It's unbelievable.
I can't wait for 10 years from now when there's no trees left in the Northwest and they go, well, where did all the trees go? Well, you idiots made us make straws that don't work. I mean, for all the negative plastic has done, it's like save the world. Are you kidding me? I mean,
and remember, Kevin, too, anything that's bad going on in the country right now, everything, remember this, don't ever forget it, is rooted in white supremacy.
Oh, you remember that. You don't got to tell me. I'm a straight white male Protestant. Everything is my fault.
Where's your hood?
And everything, you know, it's actually down at the cleaners right now. They are, everything is my fault. You know, like electricity and the wheel.
When they turn around and they say, and I've had conversations with white people who say this, white millennial, sick left ankle biters. They're just sick people. And they say, well, you know, the uprising and the support of for white supremacy in this country is out of hand. So I say, well, answer me this one simple question. Maybe I'm wrong for asking it. Maybe it doesn't make sense to some people. But if everything was rooted in white supremacy, and white supremacy was is such a huge epidemic in this country, which some lawmakers have said, if that's the case, do you think all of these white supremacists that supposedly exist in this country would allow Black Lives Matter on the street burning down cities? I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
Because then, no, because white supremacists would probably be out there with burning crosses and pitchforks and lynches, ropes to lynch people. So no. Everything that they say is rooted in white supremacy. It's bullshit. There's racism on both sides. You have whites that don't like blacks. You have blacks that don't like whites. But nobody wants to talk about that. The racism of Black Lives Matter, where they're so blatant about it. I mean, it's on their website. It's everything about how the hatred of white people, because I don't have any slave owners in my family as far back as anyone in my family can track, and every black person I know doesn't have any slaves in their family for as far back as they can track. But it's to some of them, it's my fault that black people were enslaved because I'm white in 2021.
You know, it's the biggest problem with it is that most of these people, if they actually met a white supremacist, they would have no idea what they wouldn't even notice it. You know, if they actually met a Nazi, like, you know, here's the funny thing about white supremacists. They're usually pretty open about how they feel. Yes. There's no white supremacists out there who say, no, I'm not a white supremacist. Yeah. But if you can blame everything on this, you know, blaming things on white supremacy is like blaming things on the Bilderbergs. It's just something out there in the ether that really has no way of being fixed. That way you can be a victim forever. You know, we used to, you know, give the middle finger to the system. But now it's cool to be a victim. You have someone like Oprah Winfrey who is trying to convince me that Meghan Markle, an actual princess, someone who is actually royalty, who got famous for opening suitcases, is a victim of anything? She's literally royalty. Right. Like, I don't care. If she's having a bad day, I don't care. You are royalty. Like, and Oprah's doing it? Really? Yeah, Oprah, listen, the most successful black woman in the history of the world?
Yes.
It's absurd. It's frustrating,
it's
man. It's
hard to take in at times. It really is.
Yeah, it really is, because at what level, at what point, and I think people are really starting to wake up to this. I think they're starting to wake up to the fact that the people who have it the best are the ones claiming things are the worst.
Is that reverse woke?
I think that's pansexual wokeism.
Pansexual wokeism. I'm so not up on one all the 184,000 genders and the abbreviations and who's woke and who's awake and who's sleeping and who's not woke. I mean, it's all bullshit to me.
It's just,
you know, I want to get into the whole, you know, where I'm being listened to and watched nationally. I can't even believe the the broad audience that I've amassed from all over the country, all over the place. So for those that know, I'm from New York, and so is Kevin, and the Long Island Loud majority is very active in Long Island and New York, and you guys are going to be getting very active in the government governor campaign, correct?
Absolutely. Local boy Lee Zeldin, he just recently announced that he's going to take out King Andrew Cuomo, and I will do everything along with my 50,000 members to do what we have to do to get him out.
So Lee Zeldin is a congressman on Long Island. He's one of our congressmen in Washington. Now we know Long Island is New York. It's a blue state. What I'm worried about, Kevin, is Lee Zeldin running for governor against Cuomo. Whoever's going to be the Democrat nominee. Because I think what's going to happen. Hold on a second. I got to plug in my ear thing here again. There we go. Okay. So sorry about that, everybody. My ears were acting up. So my big worry is that Letitia James, our attorney general, is going to primary Cuomo, and who knows, maybe win. And I'm wondering if Lee Zeldin is going to be running against Cuomo, or if he's going to be running against as the Democrat Letitia James. And I'm going to be doing whatever I can to make sure people are supporting Lee Zeldin as the Republican candidate. It's going to be very hard. We know our last governor, Republican governor, was George Pataki. It's going to be tough. I mean, hard work. And if we could pull it off for Lee Zeldin, then I would say, Kevin, I think we may have pulled off a miracle getting him elected. My worry is now that congressional seat that he has that's red right now. Because we got a lot of sick blue dots in Congress in New York. I mean, we got the other sicko. I live in her district, Kathleen Rice. And I'm not seeing any strong from the Nassau County GOP and the Suffolk County GOP. I'm not seeing any strong candidates surfacing to take on these Democrat Congress spots. I'm worried in the fact that if Lee Zeldin does not win for governor and we end up with Letitia James, because the only other spot for the attorney general to go is the governor's seat. That's what Cuomo did.
Yeah.
Now we're going to have another blue governor, probably worse off than Cuomo. I don't know if that's possible, but Letitia James is going to be a nightmare. And then the possibility of losing that first district congressional seat that Lee Zeldin is now. Well, I mean, I'm of course not saying Lee Zeldin shouldn't run for governor. I want him to run and win.
Well,
you know,
I know the person. I have a candidate's name. I don't know if I can announce it yet. He is he's well known on Long Island. If you're a part of our group, you know who he is. He's going to run, military veteran. He is one of the most solid candidates I've ever seen. I'm not worried about the first district so much because Zeldin won 3-1 last time. So I think that's a safe district, particularly in a midterms that I see historically as going to be a red wave. Most presidents lose the House in their first midterms. The only one that did in recent history was George W. Bush, and that was because the midterms were 2 months after 9/11. So he had all the support in the world. Historically, and this happened to Obama in 2010. This happened to Trump in 2018. It happened to Clinton in 94. This is just what happens in these cycles. Now, running against Tom Suozzi in New York's 3rd District is a man named George Santos. He's an awesome guy. We work with him very closely. He's going to be a rock
star.
I believe he won last time. Yeah. I think he got screwed over with the mail-in ballots, but we're going to do everything we can to drive out the vote for him here on Long Island.
Good, good. Yeah, I saw something on him. I hope so. So Long Island Loud Majority, I know you guys are going to be rocking and rolling for Curtis Sliwa for the mayor spot in New York City. What's the plan in Long Island? I know you guys have a rally coming up this weekend. I think, what is that? It's on Saturday. What is that, the 24th?
Saturday the 24th, 11 o'clock at Ronkonkoma train station. From there, we're going to be going to Sunken Meadow Park. We should get there at around 1 o'clock. We're going to have a huge barbecue, kick off the springtime, let everybody know what we got going on. It's going to be really wild coming up, because with Zeldin going all over the state, we're going to be right behind them running rallies all through the upstate and through New York City. You know, we've gone to Trump Tower before. We've gone to Queens.
Yes.
Right now we're connecting with a few people in Staten Island. Staten Island's a little tight, so it could be a little tough. But out there in Staten Island, we're going to don't think we forgot about you.
Staten Island's an interesting place. I've heard so many terms for that area in Staten Island, it's definitely an interesting place. But listen, I'd love to see Curtis Sliwa the mayor of New York City. I'd love to see Lee Zeldin as the next governor. Lee Zeldin is a lieutenant colonel in the army, right? I think he's a lieutenant colonel. He's a veteran, and he's reserve, so he sometimes gets activated. He's been activated before as a member of Congress, and he would be an unbelievable governor. He really believes in the conservative values, Republican, that small government, the lower taxes, which our area in New York has the highest taxes in the country, Long Island. And he's definitely Second Amendment friendly, which I love about him.
You know,
Kevin, it's funny because that's one of the big things that you never see because of the state we're in. And we have one of the most restrictive gun laws, some of the most restrictive gun laws in the country, us, Connecticut, California. But you don't see Republican candidates talk too much about the support of the Second Amendment or free speech. You don't see it. I wish we would see it more. If I had the time and the if I wasn't running two businesses and have a family, I would love to run against Kathleen Rice for Congress in the 4th District. She's non-existent. She spends more time in Washington. She's non-existent in her district. She trampled all over women's rights by voting for the Equality Act and freedom of religion and freedom of speech. She's anti. She'll say she's pro law enforcement, but she's not. She's a panderer, and she was a district attorney in Nassau, and she's a real piece of garbage. And I hope and I pray that the Nassau County GOP comes up with a strong candidate to take her out. And I hope,
you know, we've seen what happens sometimes when the party brings up their own candidates, as we've seen in my district, New York 2nd District, with Andrew Garbarino. You know, sometimes they're just an empty suit.
Andrew, I call him Grabarino because of how we voted on the background check for the guns. Well, I can't even believe it.
I'll tell you what. You know what? Exclusive to your listeners, my friend, we may have someone to get rid of Garbarino.
I'd love to see that. I'll tell you that. The other guy who was supposed to run, who was running.
Michael LePetri.
Yeah, I would love to have seen him in that spot. And most people I know would love to see him in that spot. It's him and even our state lawmakers are just.
Here we go. So there are three people. I'll show you how much of a deadbeat Andrew Garbarino is. There are three people that started this group with me. We're 50,000 strong. We're all over the island. Two of the three are in Andrew Garbarino's district. How many of the rallies did he attend while trying to win an open seat? Zero.
Zero.
Which means that he knew he was going to get in because his daddy is somebody important locally. Yep. And he knew he didn't have to do the hard work that we were doing for him. Petri showed up at all the events. He was always there, but sometimes it's hard to beat the machine.
It is, especially I was disappointed in Peter King's endorsement of him. You know, that probably was one of the huge reasons he was pushed in. And I years ago, when I was 18 years old, I was involved in the Nassau GOP heavily. I was a committeeman in the Republican Club. I'm starting to get back active again, but it was really the good old boys club, and who was going to be groomed to run. And back then there were strong candidates, but again, it was the good old boys club. But now, like, I feel like the Nassau GOP, the guy who ran against Kathleen Rice the last time, even though he did pull a lot of votes, he didn't raise much money. Yeah. And all he did was talk about roads and infrastructure.
And look, Doug Tooman's a great guy, but there was a lot that could have been done. And when I worked in the New York State Senate 6 years ago for Mike Venditto, he was a local state senator. His father was entrenched in the party for a long time. We had all 9 New York State Senate seats. Today we have 4. So you know what? Yeah. If the party has a problem with what I'm doing and who I'm endorsing, what they're doing is not working. It's just simply not working, because you're running deadbeat candidates with no energy. If Donald Trump showed us one thing, it's that authenticity matters. People want to know. People want to know that, you know, you could bump into your congressman at a deli. You know, they want to know that you're a guy from the neighborhood. They want to feel that. And Donald Trump, even with all of his money, was just one of us.
Absolutely. He cared about the people. He wasn't a politician. And he did what he needed to do. And he got the job done. It's a shame he wasn't reelected, you know, but it's hard to say that, you know, because we have to sit there. 80 million people, you know, voted for Joe Biden.
Well, Joe Biden won 100% of the Civil War veteran vote.
Right. It's hard to watch him walk through a cemetery and not laugh. Like, how he's there to see all of his voters.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's what they say. Joe Biden knows about the Constitution, seeing that he was there when they wrote it.
Exactly. The guy was.
Are we really supposed to pretend this guy isn't, like, literally dead? It's not funny anymore. He should be eating dinner at 4:30 in the afternoon, watching Murder, She Wrote, and going to bed.
Well, he does go to bed early, Kevin, if you haven't kept up with it. And he likes to put a log on the fire in the Oval Office.
Look, Vladimir Putin is a black belt in judo and still plays ice hockey. Our president can't get through a sentence.
No, he can't. And it's concerning. We've become the laughingstock right now of our nemesis and our enemies. And it's...
And of our allies.
It's not good.
Like Joe Biden, even with our allies, that gives the powers, like Narendra Modi in India or Angela Merkel in Germany, that gives them I'm a huge supporter of Israel, but even that gives Benjamin Netanyahu more power. We should be the power on the world stage, because we're the only ones that can do anything. Emmanuel Macron has like a 12% approval rating in France. So you know what? If something happens in Europe, I don't trust him to do anything. Boris Johnson is like a joke. I love him to death, but I would have picked Nigel Farage.
Yeah, probably a much better choice.
Yeah.
So after this rally on Saturday, you guys are going to start planning because obviously we're getting this beautiful weather now, and you guys are going to start planning rallies probably throughout the summer for, you know, the Lee Zeldin and Curtis Sliwa and everything.
Every weekend throughout the summer, we're going to the three of us, Heather, Sean, and myself. I believe Sean's been on the show several times. We're going to be all over New York. We're going to be doing things right here locally on Long Island. Our friend Jimmy James, he runs our Queens outfit. We're planning a huge rally for Curtis Sliwa out in Queens and Vicky Palladino in Whitestone. Vicky Palladino got famous because she told Bill de Blasio to go fuck himself.
I remember that. She's running for city council, right?
Yeah, she's running for city council in The 18th, I believe it's up in Whitestone, but she's a firecracker. She is so much fun. If you guys get a chance, every month we're down at the Whitestone Republican Club. If you guys get a chance, come down, listen to Vicky talk. She's a pisser.
Nice. Where, everyone that's listening and watching, where can they find the Long Island Loud Majority? You guys are on social media, have a website, all that. What do you got?
It's Long Island Loud Majority on Instagram, LILM 2.0 on Facebook. We're being shadow banned, so you have to Google it. You got to work a little hard to find it. Or you guys can sign up for our newsletter at loudmajorityus.com. That's loudmajorityus.com. Everything we do will be in the newsletter. We put it out about once a week. And check us out.
Good. I'm going to, everything's going to be in the show notes for the podcast. So the links will be there. The social media for the Long Island Loud Majority will be there. Check them out. If you can make a rally, go. We go on Facebook. They're always posting about their rallies. They're always posting funny live videos. Sean, one of their co-founders, did a Trump ringtone. It's hilarious. If you listen to him, he sounds just like him. You guys are a riot when you do your Facebook lives. It's funny. I'm going to have you guys come back and have all three of you on. Absolutely. And we can just shoot the shit. That'll be a lot of fun. Listen, Kevin, I thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Talking about everything. No problem. Anytime. You guys are always welcome. You have an open forum here. You come, we'll talk. We'll talk about your rallies. And you let us know. Keep us updated with the Curtis Sliwa campaign, the Lee Zeldin campaign. We'll update everybody, and hopefully some listeners will get out there and help get them elected. So
absolutely.
Again,
any help you guys can give would be great. The candidates love it. We appreciate the help. And people have been so forthcoming with what they're willing to give for their future and their children's future. It's been incredible to see. So I want to thank you for having me on and
no problem.
Spread the word.
Absolutely, Kevin. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Have a good one.
You can reach out to me with opinions and ideas for other episodes at thegreatdivide1776@gmail.com. You can also find me on social media at The Great Divide Podcast. And please be sure to leave a review for this podcast so the show can be shared to other listeners. Thank you, and God bless America.